aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. Let us never fight with falsehood and violence and hate and malice, but always fight with love, so that when the day comes that the walls of segregation is completely crumbled, we will be able to live with people as our brothers and sisters.
Welcome to the Beloved Community Podcast, brought to you by KUAF and the Northwest Arkansas Martin Luther King Jr. Council.
The Beloved Community Podcast is designed with community in mind. We seek to highlight individuals and organizations that strive to build Dr. King's beloved community in the Northwest Arkansas region, the state of Arkansas, and beyond.
Each month, you'll hear from leaders in our community working to combat poverty, racism, and equality, and promote the ideals of the beloved community where injustice ceases and love prevails. Be inspired to join the movement.
Welcome, Northwest Arkansas audience. We greet you as usual. Bit of a break from the norm. We are not coming from KUAF studios as we normally would, but that's okay. We're actually Zooming from various locations in Northwest Arkansas, but we have a very, very special recording coming to you for our listening audience. But we have a very special treat for you today because it is a very special occasion. But I'm coming to you. I'm Chris Seawood, treasurer of the Northwest Arkansas Martin Luther King Jr. Council. And as usual, I have my very, very special president, Lindsay Leverett Higgins. Say hey, Lindsay.
Hello, everyone. I am excited to be on another episode of the Beloved Community Podcast this afternoon.
That's right. Lindsay, what season are we entering into?
Election season.
That's right, election season. And with it being election season, we felt like it would be remiss of us not to be engaged with in this season for our community. And with that being said, we have been engaged, Lindsay specifically, has been engaged with various members from our community, from various organizations around Northwest Arkansas, and she felt it would be a great idea to have a roundtable discussion with various leaders, presidents from President's Council that she gets to engage with on a monthly basis, and we have several of those leaders with us today, and we're going to have a very robust conversation on how they are engaged and how they are working and we're working as members of the President's Council to engage our community to get more people to the ballot box to ensure that their rights and your rights are engaged and not undermined during this election season, not only during this election season, but moving forward. So, Lindsay, I'll stop talking and let you start talking to introduce our very special guests and get this conversation started.
Thank you. So this afternoon on our episode of the Beloved Community Podcast, we are excited to have two very special guests with us. Our first guest is Jennifer Bechet, and Jennifer is currently the president of the Northwest Arkansas chapter of Jack and Jill of America. We also are very pleased to have with us Michaela Wallace, who serves as the president of the Pi Chi Zeta chapter of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. And we are ecstatic to have both of you on the podcast with us this afternoon. As we think about, as Chris alluded to, moving into election season and thinking about November, we want to ensure that here in Northwest Arkansas that we are really doing our due diligence as a community to mobilize voters, to engage voters, to ensure that voters are educated about the process, that voters are educated about who's on the ballot. And we have had an opportunity as a President's Council to create this unique and kind of dynamic group, if you will, of multiple Divine Nine, which are your historically Black fraternity and sororities that are represented here in Northwest Arkansas, as well as a number of minority organizations represented here in Northwest Arkansas as well, to really get behind this strategy around voter education, voter mobilization, and just ensuring that all of the people in Northwest Arkansas that have a desire to participate in the process have all of the education and the ability to do so. So good afternoon. Thank you for joining us, Jennifer and Michaela.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you. So glad to be here. Excited.
So let's take a minute, and if each of you would just talk a little bit about what your who your organizations are and what your organizations do relative to the broader community, as well as to the specific functions here in the Northwest Arkansas community. We'll start with Michaela.
So hi, everyone. Like you said, my name is Michaela Wallace, and I'm the president of the Pi Chi Zeta chapter of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. And to answer your question, on a national level, we do a lot of different things, with our founding principles being scholarship, service, sisterhood, and finer womanhood. We strive for excellence. Our national president and CEO, Dr. Stacey N.C. Grant's mission right now is amplifying the extraordinary power of she through legacy, leadership, and impact. And so we, as a chapter in Northwest Arkansas, try to strive for this. We do this in various ways, from having a national program, the Miss Blue Review pageant every other year, as well as getting out in the community and serving our community in various ways, projects and things like that. We just recently did a back to school project recently with the men of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated, as well as some organizations giving back to the community to be able to get kids ready for school and encouraging them to do well. Typically, the most things that we do, we have a Northwest Arkansas Shiloh Health and Rehab is our adopted nursing home that we try to strive to go to every month to kind of sit with them, play games with them, encourage them, as well as our school that we adopted, which is Alps here in Fayetteville, Arkansas. We try to give back to them at least every semester. So we definitely get out in the community in various different ways.
Fantastic. And Jennifer, tell us a little bit about Jack and Jill and what Jack and Jill is doing on a national level, as well as here in our Northwest Arkansas community.
Okay, glad to. Jack and Jill of America Incorporated was founded in 1938 in Philadelphia. It is an organization of mothers of children between the age of 2 and 19. We have the express goal of nurturing the next generation of African-American leaders and enriching the lives of all children. How we do that, we have engagement in leadership development, social, cultural, philanthropic, and civic engagement. And in that particular manner, that is what is what we're doing today is particularly centered on that, what we're talking about today. I will tell you that even though the greater organization was begun in 1938 in Philadelphia, we've been doing the work here in Northwest Arkansas for 10 years. This is our 10th anniversary since 2014, the Northwest Arkansas. And we are 39 families strong. We have 82 children, including teens. And the greater organization is involved in voter registration, nonpartisan, on a nonpartisan basis. Nationally, we have partnered with When We All Vote, but here, I mean, I know that we're going to be talking about that more so, we are adding to the collective of effort of everybody here by going to our sweet spot. We are going to be concentrating on our teens and the high schoolers, and not just our teens, but the teens in this community, those who can vote, those who should vote.
Fantastic. Well, we are definitely excited about the body of work that we have before us, the body of work that exists between now and November, and the body of work that exists after November. We recognize that in any capacity that there will be new leadership in the White House. And it's going to be so incumbent upon us to ensure that we are a part of the process, that we're represented in a part of the process, and not just represented as adults in Northwest Arkansas, but ensuring that our teams that are old enough to register, get excited, get engaged in the process starting now, so that we are helping them to build that culture of being a lifelong participant of the process. So as we think about Dr. King and his concept of the beloved community, he believed in the power of voting as a fundamental right and as a tool for social change. Voter education and mobilization efforts aim to empower individuals, especially in marginalized communities, by ensuring that they understand their rights and that they're encouraged to participate in this democratic process. So can you share with our listeners on the podcast this afternoon some of the specific strategies that your respective organizations have around engaging and mobilizing voters here in Northwest Arkansas?
I can take that question first. This is Jennifer Bechet again. What we are concentrating on, we are going to be partnering not only with all of the other organizations that are part of our collective, but specifically with the Dream Keepers to go into our high schools here in Northwest Arkansas. And what we're going to be doing when we go into the high schools is, on a nonpartisan basis, providing education about the right to vote and about the process to vote and putting applications in hand. We have already obtained from the Secretary of State the voter registration forms, about 800, both in Spanish and in English. And we are ready to go into schools during lunch or during whenever time they will allow us to provide the education about the registration process and to provide these forms. The big thing about the registration process that may be a little known fact is that in Arkansas, if you are 17, but you will be 18 on the day of the election, you can register now. It is something that I, as somebody who is older than 17, learned during this season and actually put a registration form in the hand of a teen who literally fits within that definition and had no idea and thought he was not going to be able to vote in this election. So I've already seen the power of this, what we're planning to do. We're already starting to do it. We've already reached out to some of the schools to try to get the dates in which we can go in and have this education, provide this education and provide these forms and get these people who are 17 and will be 18 by the election, and those who are 18 but are not already registered.
Fantastic. And Michaela, what is Zeta Phi Beta doing as we think about the strategies for our organizations? What specific strategies does Zeta Phi Beta have around voter engagement and voter mobilization for the Northwest Arkansas community? Or I guess more specifically, the Pi Chi Zeta chapter.
So I think that's definitely a great question. So being a part of the president's, I like to call it the president's corner, it has definitely gave Pi Chi Zeta a stepping stool to be able to do more in the community with social engagement. So one of the things that we are doing as part of the president's corner is partnering with other D9 organizations. And we are specifically focusing on adults and senior citizens. I think a lot of times people forget about our older community and they're like, oh, well, they can't do anything. They don't know how. Well, one of the things we're doing is making sure that they still have the power to do, especially if they're cognitively available and have the ability to do that. And so one of the things we're doing on September 17th is going into various places across Northwest Arkansas, across Fayetteville, Springdale, Bentonville, as well as Rogers, making sure that we go out and get people that are not registered registered to vote. One of the things I like to point out as we go into this season of election is remembering that engagement is important, whether that be just talking to someone and asking them, you know, hey, how are you doing? But going a little bit further, are you registered to vote? This is a serious election. This year is very, very important. And so to remember that, we have to get out in the community and do just that. Also on a national level, we have our social impact pillar, and they focus heavily on not only elections on the national level, but we got to focus on elections on the local level as well. And so remembering and telling voters as we get them registered, don't forget that locally things are changing as well.
You hit an excellent point, and I appreciate that. Actually, two excellent points, but the focus on the seniors, because as we think about the makeup of our community in Northwest Arkansas, it's because of so many members of our senior community that we have the rights that we're able to exercise today. And so not taking for granted that our ability to participate in local elections, in national elections, exists because of people in the senior community that really fought for and advocated for, that were advocates, that were allies, for the rights for individuals to vote, for individuals like all of us, minority individuals, people from marginalized communities. And so I think that's excellent that we have to make sure that we don't forget about that population in our community, because it is because of the work that they did that we have the ability to continue the legacy and to continue our participation in the process. And regardless of age, we most certainly want to make sure that we are continuing and continuing and continuing to be that encourager, that they are participating in this process as well. So thank you for that.
Yeah, that's so true. And speaking along that vein, what is Jennifer and Michaela, what are some of your organization's inspiration that inspired you to focus on voting rights as a key issue for the upcoming elections?
So I think that one of the key things with this election is just the change in the way our world has shifted. I think is one of the things that made us be like, okay, I think it's time to step up our game. We're not doing enough in our community to hone in on the things that are going on. And then locally, things are changing and we're not really paying attention. I think that once you speak about like the marginalized communities, we don't believe that we have a voice. And so to encourage people to let them know we do have a voice is what hopefully our message is this year. And then nationally, things are changing very quickly and people are not paying attention. And so to be able to get out now and tell them like, hey, it's really important because of these issues. And so bringing up those main issues of the problems and things like that, that people see, you know, one vote, one voice changes, can change a whole election. And so remembering that, I think, is something we're working on heavily this year.
And I would say that right now, it cannot be denied that there is a lot of energy. People are energized right now.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And you've got to strike right now. So, and make sure that folks, as Kayla said, realize that there's more than, you know, basically the big election, you know, the presidential election. There's school board. There's, you know, your Senate elections, your state, your federal. You want to be registered and you want to actually vote in all of them. And so this is an opportunity with all of this buzz, which with all of this energy, to hone in on that message, because I think you have their attention. You have everybody's attention right now. This is an inflection point. It's an inflection point for me. I've never done a podcast like this. Okay. So it's already, there's energy. And so I think our organization as a national organization is really focused in on that. We have partnered with When We All Vote, and it's all in the name too. It's all about when we all vote. There's doesn't seem to just be a focus, you know, just on one population. It's this collective concept of getting everybody to really vote and to exercise that right that is, you know, people have died for, right?
So would you say that there are value statements being aligned now with your organizations now as well?
I would say so. Yes. I was looking on, like, this is the energy has caused me to go and do a lot more research, you know, and I think of myself as somebody who, you know, I think I already know, right? But apparently I can learn too. And just going even on our national website and seeing that we have partnered with this When We All Vote, seeing their website, which is separate from ours, and learning, you know, that there is actually an organization where you can put your name on this form and it will tell you if you actually are still registered. You may think you are. Are you current? I mean, and it's not in your state. It literally will do that nationally. So it's just, there's a lot of resources out there that I'm learning during this inflection point are there. And I'm happy to be like sort of a mouthpiece for it. Since I you know, now have this position, it's great to be a mouthpiece for other folks who may not just be on their, you know, computer, just sort of doing this little research that I'm doing.
That's great.
Yeah, I definitely say I would agree. So it definitely, the national organization, like she said, on their website, it's definitely the partners we have now, the ability that we, and the way we are shaping and formulating our statements out to the public and things like that is definitely important. And we're definitely striving in the right direction, as well as just being an organization in the Divine Nine. The Divine Nine national presidents have come together and put out a statement. And so that right there shows one, not only unity, but also the will and power of just one word and how many get just by sending out a statement. And so definitely being able to get out the information. And also, Jennifer, you hit the nail on the head. I thought I knew too. It was just the icing on the cake. Because I think that, I mean, even going back to, you know, high school and things like that, and remembering, like, did they really discuss what voting really meant? Like, okay, yeah, I know people died, but like, what that mean to me? And so having to figure that out and learn by myself as I got into college, and then realizing, oh, I need to do more than what I'm doing. And now being a young adult and seeing that, okay, it's really important about the local election, because people have been in terms for this long. And then even thinking about the Senate, being in the Senate for this long, it's like, how'd they get out of it? And then like, oh, you got to vote. I was like, oh, why did he? So having the ability and knowledge, I think, is really, really important, especially for people, not only, you know, right at, especially in the, you know, right at 18, and then even to young adults, because, you know, we get lost in the shuffle and they're like, oh, they'll know. And it's like, well, we need to hone in on that population too, because they're the population that really don't know and then get lost in things like that. So I definitely think we are striving in the right direction.
I think for a lot of us, this has really driven a shift in momentum. And because of what we see happening around us with the political process, we have taken the time to do the due diligence, to become more educated about the process, to become more educated about bills and amendments and laws and things that are being passed, because we really wholeheartedly want to be students of the game and understand how all of these dots connect, right? And as I think about just connecting the dots with what happens in local elections and the impact that that has at the White House. And so it doesn't matter who's sitting in that seat in position in the White House, but what matters is how we are going about making decisions about people elected at the local office or local levels, excuse me, that connect the dots to the White House and to Congress and to Senate, and ensuring that those individuals understand the needs of our communities and that we're having those open and honest dialogue with those individuals that go to Washington to represent us in Northwest Arkansas, that go to represent us more broadly. so that they understand the needs and the desires of the constituents in their respective communities. Mm-hmm. So I want to shift the conversation just a little bit and talk about barriers that prevent people from participating in the process. So if we think back to the Jim Crow era and some of the barriers like literacy tests and poll taxes that existed that were really measures that were designed to suppress minority voters, how does that correlate, or as we think about that, how does that impact what we see happening present state in 2024? So how are you all addressing and overcoming barriers that prevent people from registering to vote, from casting their ballots, particularly in areas where minorities are underrepresented? Are there any strategies that are coming out of your organizations that are focused on voter suppression? Are there any strategies that come out of your organizations that are focusing on how we get behind ensuring that people in our community that want to be engaged and want to participate are not faced with obstacles or with barriers that prevent them from doing that?
I can say this, and I'm sure later I'd probably come up with another way, but off the bat, the initial, even asking for the voter registration forms in Spanish at a huge rate. So not just saying, oh, I need just a few in Spanish. When we requested the forms, and we got them immediately, that's another thing that, you know, kind of surprised me during this process, literally within days, they came in the mail, asked for hundreds of Spanish registration forms. Because this community, there are folks who don't, that's what's going to keep them from going to the polls. I think, you know, the language barrier, there may be some other, you know, issues about is somebody going to, challenge their residency and their immigration status here in the U.S., all of that. But I think in this particular community, we really need to think about basically that particular population that is not English speaking. It's not just Spanish. There's other, languages, and I actually don't have forms in these other languages. So it is something that I think we are going to look into. What happens in that situation? Interpreters, Marshallese, how do you get to the Marshallese population? We have a interesting community here that is not, a monolith. Mm-hmm. So really meeting them where they are language-wise and experience-wise. What it may not just be language, as I said, it may be concerns about, some immigration issues and the dialogues that some of the things that we're hearing around that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I definitely think that's a great point, because we have a lot of youth, especially in our community, that, don't even know because of language barriers. And so I think one of the ways we're doing it different is our senior citizens. So a lot of times it has to do with mobility, and it's not necessarily like can't get to the polls. And so one of the things I think that we're focusing on with the D9 corner is mobility to those specific places. And then also one thing I've learned through this process is that a lot of nursing homes, they actually register their people to vote. However, they help them with the absentee ballots. And so I think making sure that they have the needed items they need. So typically, you only have one person at a facility, but that facility is like maybe 200 beds. How do they do, how do they make sure that they actually get everyone that needs to vote to vote? And so maybe that's something we're looking at as well as an organization, is seeing if we can help in that vein this year. Because that was something we did not realize, one person having to do 200 ballot, with 200 people, that's a lot of work. So
absolutely, yeah.
That's definitely hard. So I'm like, okay, how can we, lean in that way or that vein to be able to do that? So I think mobility, getting to the polls, is a piece, but then also, helping people who, they want to, and it's not that they don't, they want to, but how do we help them succeed in that endeavor.
I also wonder, have you all, I have to say we as well, because we were part of this as the MLK Council as well, have we given any thought to, in terms of countering narratives, in terms of misinformation, disinformation, that is out there, whether it be social media, digitally, that may be out there. And I know there are massive campaigns that do a better job of it than we possibly could. But even from a local standpoint, has there been any thought given to that, even from a local standpoint, as far as campaigns may be concerned? Because I still happen, to come across misinformation, disinformation from even from a local standpoint. So I just wonder if we've given any thought to that from a local standpoint, as far as our campaigns are concerned. Because I'll be honest, I have a 23-year-old, will be 24, 22-year-old, and a 20-year-old. And we have conversations, and they are even impacted by the misinformation, disinformation effects. And I have to counter that. So just wonder who else may be out there that may be impacted by some of these misinformation campaigns. And should we be considering that as we're rolling out our voter information campaigns?
So I think you brought up an excellent point, because I'm right in that age range too, like seeing all these different things. I'm like, wait a minute. definitely being in the president's corner, it's definitely, we've had, I think, really good discussion on how we can counter this. One way is obviously coming up with something, coming up with, like, not necessarily a slogan, but somehow, some kind of wording, marketing brand, so that everyone knows, one, who we are, but two, what we're here to do. The other way, I think, is also being able to focus on making sure that the people who are on the ballot, that we do have the option to talk with those constituents. And so one thing that came up out of this is making sure that maybe we have a candidates forum to where we can actually hear from the candidates' mouths what the message is. Then that way you can make the best decision when you go to the polls. And so I think that having those is one of the two of the ways that we're kind of countering that. The other thing I think is making sure that people do their research, do their own research. Because sometimes, what somebody says on TV, what they say on social media, there's so many fake pages out there. So many people can make their own, the dark web, all the things. Okay. And we got to make sure that we are doing our own research as well and not just believing the first thing we see. And so remembering that when we're giving out the messages, when we're talking to people about voting and their rights, I think that's a really, really, really big deal that they can definitely change and do differently.
How do you as, I'm sorry, Jennifer, go ahead.
No, I was, the most interesting piece about, well, what I was thinking would be my answer to your question is that, because I think all of the organizations, but I know definitely mine, is nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. So the concept of, acting on the impulse to say, you hear what that campaign is saying, that's hard, right? Mm-hmm. So focusing on the process, making sure that the process is pristine, is where we are going. But I love what Michaela was saying about the candidate forum, where folks telling folks, listen, they're saying, for yourself, because if people, as much as I would think that anybody would believe anything that's coming out of my mouth, they won't believe what I'm saying, even if I want to debunk what that campaign is saying. So it's the best way is to, as Michaela was saying, let people hear for themselves, tell them, do your own research. And so that's the best way that you could do it in this nonpartisan environment that some of us have to find ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Can you all share, because sometimes it makes the difference when we make the connection more personal, right? So can you all share a personal voting experience that influenced your individual approach to educating and mobilizing other people to vote? Did you have an experience where something happened, and because of that, it made you more passionate or made you a stronger advocate in your approach to this concept of voter education and voter mobilization?
I can come up with two ways. The first one, this is going to sound like a negative. It was. I had gone to the polls, and I thought, and I found that out of everybody that was around me in line, that I noticed that this poll worker said to me that I don't look like I look on my driver's license. And I was thinking, now, out of all, does maybe a lot of people don't, but why me? Why don't I? So, you know, and, you know, and the funny thing is I've discussed this with folks who are really more knowledgeable about, you know, the election process, the polling, and the folks who work there. And I was told, you know, for my own education, that people come with their own biases, but also that maybe that's not what that was. Maybe I really don't like mine. And how you actually, that there is a process if you're going to sort of raise a complaint about things that are, that have gone on during your voter experience. The other piece, though, is this concept of how do you vote absentee votes, absentee ballots when you're in school? And it's something that is something that I am concerned as to whether I did that correctly when I was young. Okay. And I think I made the mistake of registering. I had gone to law school in Massachusetts. And I thought in order to register, in order to vote, I changed my registration from Virginia, which is where I'm from, to register in Massachusetts. And it, for me, that was, it was the 1 year where I couldn't vote for, at the time, the first, I believe the first Black governor for Virginia, because I just switched my stuff to Massachusetts. And so what that's teaching me for this time is looking at the laws, it appears that if you are a college student, you have a choice as to where you vote. I do not want to speak out of turn, but when, if a college student is away, they should look at whether they are going to get an absentee ballot for where they're from rather than registering to vote where they are. And that's, so it's become important to me because I think I missed history a little bit when I, a long time ago, with my voting.
So that's a hard question, Liz. Because I don't know. I think it would have to be, growing up, you know, you always watch your parents, and they're like, you know, you go everywhere with them after school and things like that. I think for me, it had to be, you know, watching my parents get the sticker, the I voted sticker. And I was like, I can't wait to get one of those. And so I think at 18, I actually did my first election while being at the University of Arkansas. And I was so proud to wear that I voted sticker. And I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know if I knew what I was voting for at the time, but I know I voted to get the sticker. And so I think as I get older, the sticker is always a reminder that I'm making history. And so even if it's, you know, if the election don't go the way I want it to go, or goes the way I wanted to go, I can say that I made history some kind of way because my vote counted, my voice mattered. And so I think that that's my story that kind of led me to not only my passion to continue to vote, and to continue to educate myself in the voting process and voting rights and all the things encompassing. I think that's my story.
I love it. Chris, what about you? Have you had any experience that, positive or negative, that has really impacted you from a perspective of being a steward of wanting to ensure that people are educated, people are mobilized, and that people are taking advantage of the opportunity to participate in the process?
I would say yes, honestly, because honestly, I am really the first generation post Jim Crow. My family, my mom and dad really got the opportunity to vote. They were the first generation to be able to vote post Voting Rights Act. So, and then my brothers and sisters and I, after that, really, so I'm the first. So for us, it has, you know, real meaning. So we always have had, so it's always had special meaning for us. So we, you know, now I hadn't always taken it serious. You know, there were times like, you know, when I first turned 18, I'll be honest with you, I was a knucklehead. I'm like, I ain't voting. Like, what? You know, I'm like, ah, no big deal.
Not you.
Yeah. I was like, nah, no way. I don't think I really took voting seriously until, I don't think it was until Clinton's second. I think it was after that. I think it was during Bush's term when I really started taking elections serious. So, but it was always there. But, you know, you just kind of start looking back up on your history. It's like, dang, man, my parents were that generation, you know, that were growing up. The Voting Rights Act happened during that time when that was their generation, and they were that first generation that had the ability to vote. And then they had kids, and my brothers and sisters and I were that generation post Jim Crow that came up, got to go to college, you know, get that first taste of quote unquote freedom, if that's what you want to call it. And now here I am, I'm kind of squandering it. Like, well, who you think you is, boy? I kind of look at it like I have no right not to squander it. You kind of sober up. I can't squander that right. So yeah, it's kind of like now. And so now I'm like with my kids, I'm like, hey man, you gotta vote, you gotta vote. And trying to get them to understand, like, look, you have to exercise this right, you know? And so now it's kind of sweet to be able to take your kids with you to vote, you know? So I had the privilege, like last with Biden, you know, I was able to take my oldest son with me, you know, with me to vote in the last election with President Biden to vote. So those are just, you know, great memories that I have.
And even if your kids are not old enough to participate in the process, it goes back to what Michaela said. She saw her parents get the sticker. And for this generation that is so enthralled with social media, when people vote, you see the stickers on the hands and the selfies with the stickers. That matters, right? Yeah. And so how that even just something as small as the sticker was her connection to the process and feeling that sense of pride and achievement when she had an opportunity, you know, to vote for the first time and to get her sticker, like that was the big deal. And so you never know how our kids are watching. And so even just encouraging them to come along with you, to see you be an advocate for the process and to see you participate in the process, that makes all the difference in the world, because we hope that they're watching what we do and that we are instilling that legacy in them and encouraging them to be voters and to participate in the process when their season comes.
Yeah.
So as we close, I do want to ask our panelists one last question. Looking at the broader picture, what long-term changes do you all hope to see in voter participation and voter engagement as a result of the efforts of your respective organizations?
So that's a good question. That's a mouthful, Lindsay. However, I think one thing I'd like to see is just engagement and ways of knowledge. So whether that be on just the basic level, just having forums for the community to know what voting means, or even in school. Because if you teach them as a young age, then they'll know by the time they get to 17, 18, ready to vote. I think also, I just hope to see that the people in our community of Northwest Arkansas actually engage their right to vote and remember that their voice matters. Because I think at times people think that they don't, but it really does. And it can go a long way. You know, that 1% could literally be two people in the matter of the change of an election. So remembering that, I think, is something that I hope that we as a community can remember. As a marginalized community, I hope that we, as a marginalized community, remember that it took us a long time to even get the right. Mm-hmm. And so to, you know, for Chris to say, you know, I'm literally the second generation, that speaks volumes, you know, and to give back to my ancestors is to do what they fought to do, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people died for this right. And so to give back, my way of giving back, you know, is going out and actually voting, doing my own research, making sure I know what's going on in the community around me. And then just making sure that I encourage others. So other people my age, as a young adult, you know, we get into that, oh, we're fine, we don't need, that's not affecting us. But every little thing, every little change is definitely going to affect you in some way, somehow. So remembering that, I think, is hopefully where I hope to see our community get to.
Sure. Now, for Jack and Jill, Northwest Arkansas, what I'm hoping that we instill at this time, like I said, getting back to that, it's an inflection point. It's because it's because there's this big national, you know, election that's happening that got their attention. You got to keep their attention, and you've got to teach them this one thing that you hear, but you may not concentrate on, and that is that all government is local. I think that is the quote. And what that really means, that this is not the last time that you're voting. You may be getting registered this time. This is not the last time. But also just how important it is on the local level. Mm-hmm. And when you're going to cast your vote, all of those different proposals that are there, look at what those are before. Don't let it be the first time you're seeing that when you're in the at the polling place. Mm-hmm. You need to know what that actually truly means before you get in there. Who are those justices? Who are those judges that are on the ballot? All of that. So I'm hopeful that this is a starting point, but this is how we get their attention, because sometimes you need, you know, to pop out. That's the new phrase. You got to pop out, and it's very... you can tell I'm used to younger folks, right?
Your kids are going to be happy to hear you reference that. You just got some street cred.
I got street cred. Thank you. You know, but keep their attention after that. So you've got their attention. Keep their attention and don't lose it. Don't lose it.
Fantastic. So before we let you go, in true beloved community fashion, we always like to do a little Fast Five with our podcast guest. So if you're not familiar with Fast Five, we'll ask each of you a series of five just real fast, rapid fire questions, not anything related to the topic of our discussion today, but just another opportunity for our listeners to get to know our guest on the podcast with us this afternoon. So we'll start with you, Jennifer. First question. Sweet or savory?
Sweet.
Definitely sweet. Tangible book or Kindle?
Oh, tangible book.
Texting or calling?
I like to text.
I love it. Texting is so easy.
Yeah.
Pizza or burgers?
Both. All of it. No, I'll take pizza.
What's your favorite?
Pepperoni. Just give me some pepperoni. Please.
Oh, yeah.
The last one, early bird or night owl?
I am the ultimate night owl. I cannot get up early, so don't show up.
I love it. Okay, Michaela, so let's do your fast five. Coffee or tea?
Is there a neither?
That can be a thing.
Yeah, I'm going to say neither. I don't do neither one of them.
What's the backstory? What's your drink of preference, your morning beverage of preference?
My drink of beverage is like lemonade, juice. Coffee, I was just never an adamant coffee drinker. When I was younger, my granny, I used to always sneak her coffee. And then as I got older, it just was nasty and I never went back to it. Tea, the only type of tea I drink is Lipton tea with the lemonade and iced tea together. That's all.
I'm with you. I'm not a coffee fan. It's something about the smell just doesn't work for me.
It don't smell right, don't it? It's something about, I'm telling you.
That's a younger people thing.
Look.
Okay, more beach or mountains?
Beach. I don't like walking like that, so I like to sit.
Netflix or Hulu?
Oh, that's a hard one. I'm going to say Hulu.
They carry some really good shows.
Yes, Hulu because of the crime shows. Yes.
Oh, I'm here for any of the good, like my husband calls them killer shows. I'm definitely down for a true crime anytime.
Killer show.
he says I like to watch the killer shows. Okay, what about Facebook or Instagram?
Instagram.
Okay, your last question. Okay. Apple or Android?
Android.
Oh, yes. I love it because I'm team Android all day long.
Android. All the way. All the way.
Fantastic.
I need my multiple buttons, okay?
I'm completely and 100% with you. And it's so funny because I have an Android phone, but my personal computer is a MacBook Pro, and I love, love, love my MacBook Pro, but I have no desire to want an iPhone. So I'm with you. Well, thank you to our incredible panelists for sharing their insights and personal stories on voter engagement and mobilization. As we reflect on our discussion today, let's remember that every vote is important. Every voice has the power to shape our community and our future. Whether you're a seasoned voter or whether you're preparing to cast your very first ballot, know that your participation is crucial in building the beloved community that Dr. King envisioned. Stay informed, stay engaged, and most importantly, make sure that your voice is heard at the polls. Until next time, this has been Lindsay and Chris with another episode of The Beloved Community. Stay inspired and keep making a difference. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you in the beloved community.